Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
We like to imagine that the foster care story ends the way movies do. A loving home, a second chance, a happy ending. But here is the part almost no one sees. For thousands of young people, foster care doesn't end with a family. It ends on a birthday. They turn 18, the support disappears overnight, and then they walk out into the world with their belongings in a trash bag and nowhere to go. Today's guest knows the world from the inside out, and she's entered foster care at 2 years old. By 15, she had lived in 9 different locations in different homes. This is a conversation about resilience, about what actually works, and about what every one of us misunderstands about kids in the system that get left behind. Now, my guest today carries something rare. She has lived the problem and she has built the solution. Stacy Johnson is the founder and the CEO of Central Texas Table of Grace, a nonprofit that is reimagining how communities support foster youth and young people aging out of the system. What started as a small emergency shelter has grown under the leadership into a full group of care with major campus expansion now underway in Texas. She is a TEDx speaker, a recognized voice on foster care. She helps to reform, and she also is someone who blends deep into and has lived the experience with real operational expertise. When Stacy talks about what these kids need, it isn't theory, it's her life. Stacy, welcome to the show. I am so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You know, it's so funny. When I said the word Stacy, it's like, I feel so weird because we both have the same names.
Yes, I love that.
Now, I want to start at the beginning because your story is extraordinary. You entered foster care at 2 years old. By 15, you had lived in 9 different homes and attended 4 different high schools. And then at 16, you did something almost unmanageable. For a child that was in that position, you stood up in a courtroom and you emancipated yourself. Take us into that. Like, what did it take for a 16-year-old to make that decision and build a life of her own?
Well, actually, it was just, you know, I had been in 9 different placements and I asked my caseworker, can I just go to a group home? Because I if I do my chores and I follow the rules, like I could just stay there, right? You know, I had been in 9 different families, didn't work out, things happen. So she said, you know, I don't think that's a good idea. You know, it's a lot like jail. I mean, you're not going to be able to be a normal kid, but she did allow me to go to the group home. And when I walked into the office of the group home therapist, his name was Russ, I said, well, I want to get emancipated by the time I'm 16. And basically, instead of laughing me out of his office, he said, well, no judge is going to emancipate you unless you can prove that you can do this, but you can do it and you'll have to get right to work. And he got me this book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens, you know, the teen version.
Yeah.
And I wrote down the goal and I started doing the stuff and I was standing in that courtroom less than a year later.
Wow. So. That's amazing. And you mentioned a moment when a judge looked at you and told you that you were going to make it. Like, what did those words do to you, like then and now?
You're going to make me cry right at the beginning of the podcast. So basically, yeah, the judge says, you know, young lady, please stand up. And I was very scared because if I didn't get emancipated, if he said no, then I had to go back to that group home with my tail between my legs and those girls that were already kind of trying to tear me down a little bit because I was, you know, getting privileges and I was doing well and I was doing that stuff. And I'm thinking, if I have to go back there, failure, like what then, you know? But I was kind of scared if they said yes, because that was it. I wasn't going to someone's house. I wasn't renting a room. Like, I was signing a lease on my own apartment and going to be on my own. And so he asked me to stand up and he said, all I ever see in this courtroom is heartache and pain and suffering. but you're a success story and you're going to make it. And I'm happy to grant your emancipation. And he hit the little hammer thing on there and he was like, it's done. And I really look back on that and feel like that man gave me permission to succeed.
Yeah.
I believe that he told me I was going to make it and he was a judge. So I believed him. Yeah. I was like, well, if he thinks I'm going to make it, I'm going to make it, you know? And, you know, also after having the therapist believe in me and telling me I could do it and writing down those goals and doing them one by one and then having the goal happen, yeah. I believe set me up for the whole rest of my life.
It was like he gave you back your life.
Yeah. All the self-esteem that I lost in all those foster homes being rejected over and over and over again, it was like, wow, someone believes in me and I can make things happen in my life. I can. So.
I love that. Now, there's a thread in your story that I think a lot of people need to hear. You've talked about how all of that instability, the constant movement, the disruption shaped you who you are and became and how you saw yourself today. And then there was a therapist, one person who believed in you and by your own account, changed your entire trajectory. Like, tell us about how those years of upheaval shaped your sense of identity.
I think just all, regardless of the reasons or the things that happened for the foster homes to not work out, at the end of the day, you're a child and you think it's your fault no matter what.
Yeah.
So it's no here, nor here, nor there, whose fault or how or what or whatever. I felt rejected by 9 different families. Yeah. 9 people said, you're not good enough to be in our home. And I think that it wasn't necessarily all that, but that's what you take in. That's what you hear. That's what you feel. You don't know what's going on. You don't know what to make sense or how to make sense of any of it. So all it is like just rejection after rejection after rejection and just feeling like you're not worthy of anything.
Yeah.
And so it just feels like there's something wrong with me. Like I can't do things. I don't know. It's very disorienting as a child to lose your stability that many times. Not to mention, I was in 5 different high schools. I was in, and I still graduated, which I think for these kids, when they're in more than even 2, it's very difficult. And so I was in 5 different high schools. And then, I mean, I was 5 different religions by the time I was 15. You know, you go to different homes, they have different, you know, ways of doing things. And so it just really ends up being disorienting. So that was my experience. And when that therapist in the group home gave me back my voice and gave me back control of my life, like I don't just have to sway here and there, like I can take control and do some things and make the thing happen. I feel like that was like, I could rinse and repeat that for the rest of my life. And I almost attribute every success I've ever had to him teaching me that process, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Now, tell us about that therapist. Like, what did they see in you? And what does it tell you about the power of just one consistent person showing up for a child who's never had that?
It's hard to know when you've only seen the person through the eyes of a child, but I reconnected with him. So now what I know about him is that he's exactly the man that I thought he was. He just cares about people and he's good at his job and he just does it the right way. And I'm sure he's impacted so many kids. But when I first opened, Table of Grace as a shelter for under 18 kids, I reached out to him and thanked him on LinkedIn and he wrote me back. And it was just, again, he gave me something that just can't really be just manufactured and given. He gave me just like validation of who I was, not only then, but what I'm doing now. And it was just like, wow, like that just feels so good.
Yeah.
And just to see that he is like a good person. He was the group home therapist. And then when I reached back out to him, he was like the clinical director over the whole, you know, organization. And, you know, so he had grown in his life too. And then interestingly, when I got a grant, they surprised me by bringing him there to give it to me.
That's wonderful. My goodness.
Pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing. It's really amazing. You know, this is the part of your story that like stopped me in my tracks. Like you said that you have no childhood photos of yourself. like none. And rather than let that be, you know, a quiet grief, you turned it into a mission, making sure that every child at Central Texas Table of Grace has photos of themselves growing up. And, you know, and then you were, you, it was like, you know, you were there, you know, for like a single text message from a former foster youth who had been left homeless at 18 that pushed you to, you know, expand everything that you were doing.
Yeah. Okay. Those are two really great, actually, things. The first one, I do have to give credit to my dear, dear, dear lead staff member, Cecily, who basically texted me one day and showed me a photo album of kids, you know, the kids doing stuff, their last activities, everything else. And she's like, look, I've been making these for the kids when they leave.
Yeah.
She said, I didn't have any photos of myself when I was little because I don't believe she was in foster care, but she had some problems with her mom. And so she doesn't have that. And I said, Cecily, we're making this a policy. Like, this is going to, we're making this a thing so that every kid gets this no matter what. This is going to be a procedure. This is going to be a thing. We're going to make sure they get their photo album when they leave. You know, we're going to make sure that they have all the pictures with their friends and with their, you know, doing all the activities and stuff. And so now, yeah, every single kid gets a photo album from their time at Grace, the under 18 ones. And then, yeah, the second story is basically just, I started with under 18 kids. I opened a shelter.
Right.
But when I started the program for the kids aging out, it was because about 5 years after opening the shelter, I started to get calls from kids who had aged out of care and were struggling, having real big problems. And some of them I could solve, you know, meet a kid at a grocery store, you know, pay so-and-so's rent. You know, the board would always okay it when I needed to do something like that. But we didn't have a budget for that. And I was just one person. And I'm going somewhere every day, bringing a car seat, doing groceries, doing something. And finally, when I got a text from a young lady, I just said, this is it. I have to start a program. I have to do something because this isn't good enough. Just me. Right. I have to do something. And so I did.
That's awesome. That is so awesome.
I actually have the text if you want to hear it.
I would love to hear it. Yeah.
You know, the reason I actually screenshotted it and make sure I had it is so that, because it really illustrates the problem. And this is not a one-off. She goes, I guarantee you no one effing cares about kids in the system or what happens to us the day we turn 18. I was dropped off in downtown Houston, my 18th birthday, with no money, no phone, no ID, or any of my papers, which I still only have copies of, at a homeless shelter where we had to stand in line and draw a piece of paper from a bowl to see if we got a bed, and I didn't. I'd never even been to Houston.
That's insanity. Wow. I guarantee you most people don't even realize that that's happening to a lot of people in foster care that turn 18.
It's the reality, and it's the majority.
Yeah.
And it's not just that there's not enough places or enough things, but at that point, if the system is reaching out to say, hey, we can help you after you turn 18, what do you think they're saying?
Yeah.
Do you think they want the help from the state anymore? Do they think that they feel like the state has ever helped them, whether it's true or not?
Yeah.
Do they feel that the state has helped them? Do they feel that the programs have helped them? Do they feel like the facilities and the foster homes and the 10 different high schools that they're in, do they feel like that was help?
Yeah.
So they're kind of going to be like, okay, bye. But they're a teenager. So they don't know well enough what they're going to encounter. They just think, I got it. I'll just get a job. I'll just do this. I'll just do that. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
It's real hard to get a job when you don't have an ID.
Yeah.
Or a social security card or any type of anything. And most of them are leaving care with nothing of the sort.
Yeah. Wow. Now, when we go back to those pictures, like, why do those missing photos matter so much more than people realize?
Because it's your identity, you know, because when we look back at memories and we look at photos and like, you know, regular families, they have photo albums, they look back at them, you know, maybe it's on the computer now, but it's like, it tells a story. It tells a story of who you were, who you became, you know, and when you have no identity, it becomes really hard to fight for yourself and make the right choices for yourself.
Right.
Because you don't know who you are.
Yeah.
You're so busy trying to create a personality for every single person that you meet, because maybe this one won't reject you.
Right.
Maybe this one, you know, will think I'm okay. Like if I say all the right things and I like all the stuff they like and I do all the stuff they do and I say yes and I let them walk all over me, well, then maybe they'll accept me, you know? And I just see so many of these kids bending over backwards to be something for anybody that they just lose who they are. And photos are a part of that. Photos are a part, seeing your stages, seeing your growth, seeing, you know, all those things, it just really, it's an anchor. But when you don't have that, and also a lot of people with trauma don't have a lot of memories.
Yeah.
So that's tough too. So it just is a loss of identity, I feel.
I agree with you. And what did that text say that changed the course of your organization? When you got that text and you read that, like, how did that actually like shift things for you and the way you actually started to look at the organization and maybe the way you were going to do things?
I think that what it was getting a snapshot into the moment that it happened. That's literally what happens. They say, do you want me to find you help? Do you want me to find you something? Do you want to do anything? No? Okay, where do you want to go? And when I saw that, like, it just sort of like clicked it. I mean, I've been doing this at that point for 5-6 years. Like, I know somewhere in there that's kind of what happens. But it was sort of seeing it in writing on my phone and having it dropped in my lap.
Right.
And seeing where she was now, because the way I got in contact with this one wasn't my past kid. This was in the shelter. This was a girlfriend of one of my past kids, and she had aged out. And so when it dropped in my lap, I think it just forced me to look at that, because you can't look at everything or you'll become overwhelmed and not be able to do anything. You have to look at the kids and the things that you can do right there in your community, right there in your organization, your home, your life, whatever it is.
Yes.
You just have to look here.
Yeah.
And so when I saw the moment, I was like, I got to catch it in that moment.
Yeah. Wow. Now, you know, for people who are listening out there, if this conversation is moving you the way it's moving me, here's what I'd ask. Don't just feel it, remember it. Because the young people Stacy is talking about in every community, including yours, they're there, they're suffering, and they need your help. Follow the advisor with Stacy Chalemi right now. Every week, we bring you the people doing the real work, the ones turning the hardest experiences into hope for someone else. Now, let's pull back, you know, the curtain on what this work actually looks like, because I don't think most people actually have any idea. Like, you've described the behind the scenes reality of supporting young adults who have, like, you know, no safety net at all. We're talking about like grocery runs, last minute housing, the kind of ordinary support, you know, most of us got, you know, from family without even thinking about it. Like, paint the picture for us, you know, and then I want to hear you know, to the biggest, you know, bust out the biggest myth, because, you know, most people assume that if you just give a kid aging out a place to live, the problem's solved, that, you know, saying that housing alone is not enough. So what is everyone missing?
So exactly that housing isn't just enough. And that's why, and neither are these grocery runs or, you know, pay the rent one time, or that's not sustainable either. That's just the Band-Aid on the immediate problem in the moment. And so that's why I started the second program that I started, was so that we could not only provide the housing, but we could, you know, kind of walk alongside them, help them. This is supervised independent living. This is not their following rule. They're a grown-up. They're an adult. Not really. But they're a grown, they're an adult. So they make the choices, they do the things, but we just like walk alongside them. And there's a few requirements for the program, but not like this laundry list of things. Like, we're trauma informed. We understand that they're going to have some issues and problems. So we provide the housing. But what people don't really understand is that these kids are not broken. They haven't failed.
Right.
They've been let down by the systems that weren't designed to stay there for them.
Yeah.
And so we're building something that stays, and that's why we're building this campus, because we need to get to them so much more earlier. Mm-hmm. We're helping them now. Some of them come in at 20, some of them come in at 21, and we'll help them and we'll do that. But if I was able to be in relationship with that child when they were 15 years old,
yeah,
this would be going a lot smoother. Mm-hmm. So we're building a campus that is going to serve children from 0 to 21 plus.
Yeah.
So that on separate sides for the older kids, but it's an entire community campus so that we can just provide stability. Because to me, the myth is that they need some perfect home or perfect foster home or perfect type of home or perfect thing. But they don't need it to be perfect. They just need it to be stable.
Right.
That's it.
That's true. That's so true. That's all. You know, nothing in this world is perfect. You know, it's just, you know, stability is what they really need.
We can't have them in 15 different high schools and expect them to function in the world.
Exactly.
Or think they're smart or finish high school. Or, you know, or it's going to affect all their choices from then forward. Because again, what does a kid think? It's my fault.
Yeah.
It's everything is my fault. So they've been in 15 high schools, but they failed because they're stupid.
Yeah.
They failed because they can't do things. They failed because all this, and they're putting it on and putting it on and putting it on. And why have they been in 15 high schools? Because they got rejected 15 times from a foster home or a placement or a something or whatever. And I'm not exaggerating when I say 15. I've met several of them.
Yeah. You know, what do these like young people actually need to rebuild a future?
So they need people to teach them how to do the things they need to do. But some of them need to start so much more far back from basic. You know, yeah. I mean, they're not even usually equivalent to a regular 18-year-old that, you know, is turns 18 and of course still has a lot of help from their parents, but just maturity wise and things like that, because these kids have had so much trauma that it sort of stunts their maturity in different things in different ways. And so it's like you're releasing a 15-year-old out into the world and saying, have fun.
Yeah.
Like, see how you do. And that 15-year-old doesn't have an ID or a social or, know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Or any of those things. And they think that they're nothing. So where do we think that kid's going to go?
Exactly.
What do we think's going to happen?
Yeah.
So we got to step in. We got to step in.
We definitely have to step in. Like, this is where your work gets like bigger than any one, you know, shelter. And I think it's part of our listeners that, you know, they could actually listen and act on it. Like, reframe foster care as not an individual kid's failing, but as a shared responsibility, something communities can change when they commit to showing up, you know, consistency. And for the long term, like, you've also talked about honestly about the harm that, you know, performative, you know, or short-term help can do. So let's get practical. Like, what's the difference between, you know, help that actually changes a life and help that just makes a giver feel good?
I think that a lot of kids, I know personally, personally for me, if someone did sort of reach out to me in any way and want to be there and do something and they did it and then they didn't answer the phone again, or I didn't hear from them checking on me again, or they didn't do anything, it almost was like additional proof that I didn't matter.
Right.
Because it was like, well, they didn't even check to see if I got that or if I did that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just think that, you know, let's all be kind and let's all help people. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with doing a one-off helping someone like that way in any way, shape or form. But what I'm saying is, don't make it about either I can be a foster parent or I do nothing. Like, there's a lot of programs and initiatives and things that help foster kids that know all the research. They know they've done all the things. They know they're trauma informed. You know, there's a lot of places that are good places. There's a lot of bad places, but there's a lot of good places. And so we can do that as a community and come in and help and do a lot of things that aren't just becoming a foster parent.
Right. That's so true. Like, and for the person listening right now, the donor, the business owner, the neighbor, the faith community, you know, person who wants to move from caring about this to actually doing something, where do they start?
Okay. Well, like I said, I am doing something really big right now. So as always, any support is welcome. On my website, centraltexastableofgrace.org, you can find out more. But what I'm doing now is I'm building a $15 million campus for these kids. And we're 2 million away from the, well, I'm not even, I'm, we're 1.8 million away
wow.
from the goal. And so we have to raise that by October to unlock one of the other grants that we got. And so it, once we have that and we break ground in a couple months, it's going to transform lives.
Yes.
Our programs are already transforming lives, but to be able to have it on one campus and have all the things that we're going to have there on that campus.
Yeah.
I mean, we even have entrepreneurship opportunities. We have training things. The new under 18 side is going to have a salon. It's going to wow. where they can get their hair. They can do, you know, everything like that. They yeah. can get anything done by a professional. And so it's just going to have so many cool things. So that, and then, but if you're in a faraway community and you want to get involved locally, you know, research it, look up some local places that are helping foster kids and reach out.
I love that. Now, you went from a 2-year-old in the system to a 16-year-old starting and standing alone in a courtroom to the founder and the CEO building, you know, the very thing that you needed and never had. So from everything that you've lived and everything that you've built, you know, what do you want most people to understand about these young people and about what it really takes to interrupt a cycle of trauma?
It just takes support. It takes a listening ear. I want to say that every single one of my mentors in life has been my boss. And you're making me cry again. These people, like I had a boss that hired me when I was 20. I hadn't had a college degree. I had been working at Kinko's, you know, Kinko's Copies, you know, like the copy place.
Yeah.
I had been working there since I was 16 and been there, you know, for 4 or 5 years. And I needed a second job. Like it wasn't making it. I was making $9.90 an hour and I was needed a second job. So I looked in the paper and I called this place and it was called Kentry Insurance. And it said it was an ad. And it said, we'll train the right person, you know, 75,000, usually the first year, college degree preferred, but not required. And I called, it said, fax your resume, but I called and I was, and the branch manager answered the phone and I was like, I'm Stacy. You might even know me. I work at FedEx. And he was like, we need people like you on the phone. Can you come in today? I went in and I had to go through like 4 or 5 interviews. He was like, I don't think my boss is going to let me hire you. He's like, you're young, but he's like, just bring me everything you've ever done. And I brought him my emancipation binder and because it had letters of recommendation and stuff like that. And then I got hired. And my first year, I did make a lot of money and I was 20 years old. And that man raised me. I worked there for 9 years and he raised me. I mean, he was like my dad and he told me the hard things. He told me, you know, things I didn't want to hear sometimes, but he raised me up and he supported me and he encouraged me. And that set me up for success at anything I was ever going to do, because that was another real big self-esteem builder. And then after that, 3 more bosses. One of them was a mentor to me, helping me open the shelter, introduced me to Niall Maxwell, a big person here who's helped me. Like, so really just support, be there. And if you hear the keywords, if you hear that the kid has had instability, you've got a young 20-year-old, a young 17-year-old, if you've got someone, just listen, be there. If they're a little rough around the edges, but they're trying, give them a little extra help. Don't just fire them. Don't just, you know, walk alongside them a little bit. I'm sure that Bill wanted to fire me 100 times, but he didn't. And now here I am.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, you know, I know you have a lot of programs and services. Can you tell us a little about what your organization is about and the services that you provide?
Absolutely. So it started out 11 years ago as an emergency shelter serving age 5 to 17, 13 beds, small place. It's basically just designed for while they're waiting for a foster home, you know, a place for stability for them to figure out what's needed and then why they wait for a foster home. But because there's a placing crisis in Texas, and there's not enough homes and things like that. Kids were staying a lot longer than like the 90 days they're supposed to.
Yeah.
So, and then in a few years later, that's when I started to get the calls from the kid, from the young adults. So after 5 years, I started Grace 365, where we provide a fully furnished apartment to 18 to 21 year olds that have aged out of foster care. And we provide them a fully furnished apartment. We do life skills classes. We meet once a month where we do programming, like where we cook a meal together. We do the classes. We bring in speakers and things like that. And then we actually are just getting ready to open our child placing agency, because the purpose of this entire campus is that I'm trying to provide a continuum of care from 0 to 21 plus, so that whatever these kids need, whatever option of care, that I personally can provide it in my organization. Because then what happens? They stay in the same school. Mm-hmm. They're around people that they know. So say they are in a facility, my facility, and then they need to go to a foster home. Well, then I'll have all the foster homes that are here in their school district so that they can still stay in the same school.
Right.
If the foster home doesn't work out, God forbid, and they have to come back, they will come back to people that they know. It will be a warm handoff no matter what happens, no matter what option of care they need. If they get pregnant, guess what? We can still care for you and your child if you don't want to repeat that foster care cycle.
Right.
Because half of their babies go back into foster care, by the way. When these kids have babies, 50% of their babies go back into foster care. So we can break the cycle. They've been damaged for sure, but we can help them be whole again.
Right. Well, where can people go to find your organization?
CentralTexasTableOfGrace.org. I know it's long. It's totally spelled out. CentralTexasTableOfGrace.org. And then we're on all the social media channels under that, or under the shortened CTX, Table of Grace.
I love it. And if you wanted someone to walk away today with something valuable, what would you like them to walk away with and remembering from this conversation that we had today?
The kids are worth it.
Yeah.
They're all, every single one. Every single one of them could be what they're supposed to be. 100%. But we have to help. Yeah. We have to help.
Yes. That's a 100% yes. Definitely. Now, for everyone out there, it turns out the thing that changes a child's life isn't a grand gesture or a perfect system. It's consistency. It's someone who shows up and keeps showing up after the crisis has long passed. Now, Stacy Johnson is the living proof of what happens when even one person believes a kid will make it. And she has spent her life making sure that thousands more hear those same words today. Today, she reminded us that the better outcomes aren't the inevitable ones, that they're built by communities that are willing to show up for long term. And I just want to thank you so much for being here and for the work that you do. And for our listeners, I want you to learn more about Central Texas Table of Grace, support the mission, and connect with them. And if this episode has touched you, and share it with someone who believes in this like we do, and that no child should ever age out into nothing. And I want to really thank you for what you're doing. I think you're an amazing individual, and I am so proud of you and everything that you've done and you've accomplished. You are a true example of what can happen when someone actually cares about another human being and takes the effort and takes the time to devote their time into that one person and help that one person. So I just want to say thank you for being you, and thank you for what you're doing.
Right back at you, my new friend, Stacy. Thank you so much. Sorry, blubbered all over your show.
No, not at all.
Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate it so, so much. And I'm proud of you too. You're a pretty amazing human yourself.
Thank you so much. And same goes back to you, babe. My heart to you.
Thank you.